that the course of events is bigger than men, that the trend of world destiny is beyond the control of individuals, is illustrated by the history of our own times. Not even Hitler, with all the notably dynamic energy he evoked in himself and inspired in others, could change this inevitableness. It is an illusion bred by historians whose only guide is logical intellect and external observation, that any particular person is so important and so powerful that he is able to alter the character and fate of his times, or even the mind and fortune of his nation. It is true that the rise of every movement coincides with the career of some remarkable man. But all he does, all that he can do, is to provide in himself the conditions whereby karmic forces and evolutionary trends may achieve their aims for his age or people. It is inevitable that if he is used as such an instrument, his own personal aims will coincide with them at the time. It is his genius to perceive and provide for them. The karmic forces and evolutionary processes now active are hidden imponderables beyond any individual's control. If we see a particular man seeming to shape contemporary destiny, this is merely an appearance. Such a man is but an instrument for powers higher than himself, whether supernal and holy or infernal and devilish. Therefore, when men capable of great leadership appear on the scene, sooner or later they come to possess an influence commensurate with their greatness. It is only seemingly true that men are anterior to movements, that the outstanding epochs of history were inaugurated by outstanding persons, but it is really true that they are the focal points expressive of such movements and epochs. Every great movement, whether creative or destructive, has always seemed to be the achievement of one man or the child of one leader, but that which gave it the burning impulse of birth, and fed it with strength that it might live on and do its work, came from outside the man. It is not that a single individual at the helm of affairs remolds the life of a people, but that the hidden forces of evolution and the historic forces of destiny find a fit outlet for their work in such an individual. For it is not alone his personal ambitions and desires, capacities and defects, which dictate the course of his people's history, but also the inexorable operations of these two powerful mainsprings, a self-incurred destiny and the evolutionary world idea. In short, all heroes and all dictators, despite their illusion of self-creation of a movement or revolution, are really channels for impersonal forces as they enact their spectacular parts in the world drama. Destiny plays the last card, the winning trump, as usual. History can be understood properly only on a twofold basis of the personal and the impersonal. The first points to the purposes, minds and talents of the men who figure most in it, the second points to the great universal forces which use them. In the tremendous events which have unfolded themselves all over the world for several years past, there is plenty of evidence that new forces are entering men's minds and rousing men's unconscious approval or opposition. But behind all secondary issues and unworthy ramifications, behind the colossal struggle between the relatively good forces that are lifting them upward and those relatively evil ones that are dragging them downward, the will of the world idea is imposing itself. Nothing could be more abnormal than the age of new, quickly changing conditions in which we are living. We find it hard to let the past impose itself too strongly upon us when it is so inadequate to the new problems. Our eyes are forced to concentrate themselves more upon the present and future, to look forward rather than backward. As in everything else, a double reckoning is needed here. There is a credit and a debit side of history's account. We need courage and initiative to separate ourselves from the bad and outworn things. We need wisdom and calmness to retain the good and useful ones. People have made almost a religion out of their civilization. To point out its shortcomings as well as to predict the consequences if not remedied in time, is to commit sacrilege and blaspheme before their God. Yet this same civilization shows enough symptoms to indicate that they have approached the extreme limits of materialism with terrifying consequences for themselves. There is no real way out other than a reaction against this extreme position, no real relief except to turn automatically and spontaneously away in the opposite direction, that is, towards their spiritual nature. The insufficiency of the unillumined intellect in practical living has become more and more revealed to them, so they have to turn away from it to the intuitive within themselves simply because there is no other direction in which they can turn. The path of human evolution is not a straight line, but a zigzag spiral which jerks from side to side, as well as up and down. This cycle of alternating human development is a historic one, and can be found throughout man's past. Thus, certain tendencies or movements, such as materialism, appear as recurring phenomena in history. The evolution of the living being is marked by a spiral movement which brings it back again and again to corresponding but not identical conditions. Not all portions of humanity are at the same place in this movement. This spiral-like character of the circle explains why some nations or races seem to be rising but others falling, why some are weak and helpless when formerly they were strong and dominant, why some are inert and backward while others are active and purposeful. The world has passed through and is now on the last lap of the downward arc of the phase of excessive materialism. The reaction from it has already begun in our time, under the twofold pressure of external events and internal directives from the higher power, or rather man's own over-self, exemplifying the will of God for this time. These spiritual influences are working upon mankind everywhere but working more through the individual hearts than through official organizations. They exist in countries where the ruling powers are openly materialistic and irreligious as much as in countries where the ruling powers are not. If human evolution were left to man alone, or to chance alone, this might not have happened, but it is compelled to obey universal laws. For 20 years after the First World War, civilization was given a long opportunity by karma in which to set its house in order. It failed to do so. The vital period for mankind, a period which may roughly be called the crucial period, lasted for about 12 months before and 18 months after the end of the war. If chaos occurred then in some quarters of the post-war world, crisis prevailed in others. Hope in many lands and ruin in others, marked those opening years of the peace, necessarily full of confused suggestion and experimental movement, of swift change and articulate discontent are all following in rapid succession. Like an old tree, the old era was being torn up by its roots. But all were conscious that somewhere ahead either a tremendous transformation or a tremendous collapse awaited them. The time was short. Decisions had to be made hurriedly. The spiritual trend of this generation, and consequently its physical destiny, was largely decided within those 2.5 years. It was then that the future pattern of the world's present and coming destiny was largely shaped. This second post-war period is, in its way, just as important as the first period was. For on the wisdom or foolishness of the personal decisions which have been and are now being made, on the spiritual courage or cowardice shown by leaders and led alike, depends the happiness or misery of millions of people. The first step to cure present miseries is to change our personal and national thinking, to stop thinking in terms of materialism and start thinking in terms of spirituality, to cease cutthroat selfishness and begin mutual cooperation, to lighten emphasis on physical needs and increase the emphasis on spiritual ones. Humanity has reached the turning point in her young life. She must prepare to take up the responsibility of maturity. She must give a nobler direction to all this tremendous dynamic activity, a deeper significance to all this rushing energy. The change that the evolutionary forces of nature are asking from us is a drastic one, yet if accepted and made, it would be our best guarantee of victory over the destructive forces. A calm perception of mankind's moral imitations and a philosophic acceptance of them need not lead to a dismal and paralyzing pessimism. For a colossal evolutionary movement is always in progress which nature has guided and activated with infinite patience to its present point. We may understand that mankind is on the upward move, however slowly and through however many dismal lapses and retrogressions. Some change more quickly than others, but no man is what he was 10 years ago. If the inevitability of change must be granted, then the inability to go back and be what he once was must likewise be granted. Simply because he cannot, man will not remain a static creature. He must go forward or degenerate. But his forward movement is an enduring one, whereas his backward movement is only a temporary one. for that which ever impels and enables him to evolve is a force which ever exists within himself. It is none other than the force of his higher self, his divine soul. This is the secret energy which is lifting him upward and activating his development. If his evolution depended only upon the whim of his personal self, then it would be an uncertain and often hopeless process. That the mysterious power which belongs to his over-self is the real driving power of his evolution is the best assurance of his ultimate achievement. Consider that the numerous living cells which compose the tissues of our bodies will themselves one day evolve into individual human beings. The spiral-like wave of evolution is infinite, carrying the minutely small onward to the unimaginably great. In these terrible times, the quest of this over-self has an enhanced value. Quite apart from its personal results, the knowledge that higher laws still rule the world and that the forces of evil are doomed to self-destruction in the end saves its possessors from despair and gives them hope. The ego crisis. It was pointed out in an earlier work that tremendously accelerated change is a dominant note of the present period. However much we may dislike interruption in thought and behavior, we cannot escape the change so both good and bad which are being pressed upon us. We must recognize this insistent and unseen pressure as a challenge and adapt ourselves to the good in it as well as reject the bad in it. Millions of people had their whole life uprooted during the war. They were cruelly dragged from their familiar surroundings, ruthlessly parted for years from their old homes and separated from their communities of which they felt an integral part. How many lost or were robbed of nearly all they possessed: a life, health, land, houses, money, business, furniture, even most of their better clothes. They were not only mercilessly stripped of things, but in many cases were forcibly separated from wives, parents, or children. Statistics revealed that in England alone more than half the civilians moved to new residences during the war. The memories of the once comfortable past became tortures of regret whilst the pleasant helps for the future were turned to unpleasant anticipations. The easier fate often belonged to those who had to make a change because of their work than to those whose connections were with the armed forces, but often not. Why should this law of change dominate the world of physical forms as well as human affairs? Why cannot a permanent social form, a stable individual existence, be created and maintained forever? For answer, let us go into the secret structure of every atom. What do we see? Ceaseless vibration. Let us go next into every human mind. There we will see the perpetual birth of a progeny of ideas. This is its very nature. But these facts remain half-truths unless we couple them with the major fact that behind the atom is the everlasting stillness of God, behind the mind is the witnessing silence of the over-self. However often history may have repeated itself in the past, it has not repeated itself today. For the situation now is unique. It is a world crisis, and not merely a continental or national one. It touches all humanity, and not merely a section of it. This is the first time a situation like it has ever risen. Such an external event is in line with the extraordinary internal event which marks a turning point in the spiritual evolution of the human ego. The outer conflict which materially affects mankind has been matched by the inner conflict which troubles its subconscious self. It is more necessary than ever amid the turmoils and dangers of today to understand something of the divine idea inherent in the universe, and cooperate intelligently and willingly with it. These studies have therefore an importance which is not realized by most people. The world mind does not work quite like a human architect, for it is not separate from its materials or activities. Therefore, when the phrase divine idea is used in these writings, it should be understood to mean not an architectural plan or pictorial drawing, but the inherent necessity whereby manifestation follows a certain way and not a different one. Everything in the cosmos is passing through various stages of unfoldment. And because it originates in the divine substance, all the possibilities of such unfoldment from lowest to highest are inherent in it. They do not have to be planned for. They are already there as part of its innermost nature. Every man who looks back on his own life may discover that it has moved onward in certain noticeable periods, each of which was the expression of a particular physical or mental trend. Every nation which does likewise may make the same discovery about its collective history. And because it is the inner life which, after all, manifests itself in the outer one, because it is the underlying idea which molds the character and form of every epoch, it will be highly profitable to make clear to our own consciousness what is the special idea which is coming into birth during this present time when an entire epoch is so obviously disintegrating before our very eyes. We must look at, and judge, contemporary history by its secret connection with a special evolutionary crisis which intellect only obscures and insight alone reveals. It does not need much examination of the facts to show that human evolution works through three successive phases, the physical, the intellectual and the spiritual. If the human entity is to develop its capacities at all, it has to develop them through a self-centered individuality combining the first two. This is a natural and necessary phase of its history. The divine idea for human evolution has a place for the personality's self-centeredness, for out of this development of egocentricity, this intensification of separative consciousness, the human entity differentiates itself from all the others. It is necessary for man's progress that he include the extroverted and egocentric attitude. For a time it serves a useful purpose in his development. The various capacities of the physical body and potentialities of the mental-emotional psyche are brought out by it. Out of the unknown life of man's unremembered past, there comes down to him the legacy of being able to know and do so much more than any animal can. The selfish and possessive instincts, the materialistic and extroverted attachments in human nature are not there by any degeneration on its part but rather by its own development. They are natural results of bringing out its latent capacities and faculties, of expanding its consciousness from more primitive stages through a quest for individualized life. They are a part of the rhythmic evolution which is such a feature of the divine world idea. How else could nature form man's ego unless its informing life and consciousness had been given a wide enough experience, unless they had been allowed to journey through the bodies of the adder, the tiger, the cow and the horse for example, and gain the attributes and consciousness that such bodies could manifest. They were not merely useful but quite necessary in the making of the ego, the I am. When this finite center of consciousness finished the preparation in other kingdoms of nature and began its life as a human ego, the development of its selfish nature was necessary and useful to its ultimate goal. This provided it, through desire, with valuable motives for activity and, during the earlier and intermediate stages of that life, was its strength and glory. The ego had to enlarge its field of power and experience and expand its sphere of acquisition in the course of its progress. The multiplication of desires and the struggle of egocentricity, with the consequent intensification of personality, as well as the growth and extroversion of mental faculties, were necessary phases of its unfoldment. Man could gain his fully individualized awareness of himself, of others, and of his environment in no other way. During the long course of his history, it was through this very selfish extroversion that man gradually manifested the potentialities with which nature endowed him and thus both expressed and developed himself. It was a natural and essential process, which brought him the requisite experience and the resulting knowledge of his own individuality and powers. It was an indispensable phase of his development that his ego should grow in strength and expand in consciousness. The yearning of young egos, impelled by desire and in need of experience, was for activity. The yearning of old ones, disappointed in desire or satiated with experience or inwardly urged towards truth-seeking, is for rest. How many a series of earthly existences, how many a wave of successive enfleshments, separate the first group from the second. The only reason why the great mass of humanity failed spiritually to grow up more quickly was not one for which it can be blamed. It had not had enough time, and the richer experience which comes with time. Dozens of more rebirths were now needed to gain the deeper consciousness, the finer perceptions which distinguish mature persons. Up to the present point in his development, it was the proper and useful business of man to acquire capacities and possessions, to differentiate himself through selfishness. but in doing this he lost more and more his spiritual kinship with nature and his intuitive guidance. This middle point of his evolution is when intellect awakens and develops, which is why it is the most dangerous one. For here the ego is most strongly individualistic, most stubbornly materialistic, most filled with selfishness, most wedded to the use of cunning for its own gain and consequently most harmful to others. Many of the egos which have incarnated in contemporary bodies have reached this extreme limit of individualization but have been the most unwilling of all to make the about turn for which evolution now asks. They refuse to join the next trend, which is towards harmony, peace and cooperation with others, towards mutual help and service, towards a more spiritual and less sensuous worldview. The spiritual evolution of the human race is partly a struggle to overcome the strong obstacles of its own self-regarding animalistic and extroverting tendencies, partly a discipline of the intuition-crushing intellect. There is nothing wrong in these tendencies by themselves and in their place. But when they entirely dominate consciousness, they give rise to extreme selfishness and cynical materialism. It is an inevitable result of past and present phases that excessive attachment to the animal physical side of life should arise within it and that selfishness and wrongdoing should arise in the relations between the egos, that evil should become as active as good and even, at certain periods, more active than good. An evil creature is simply an insufficiently evolved creature. Such a stiff thickening of egotism, such an extroverted attachment to the physical personality is unavoidable in the human entity's development. It cannot be prevented. But in doing this it naturally strengthens its own selfishness, and its own antisocial attitudes. This eventually brings about clashes with other egos. It begins to sin and consequently to suffer. The evils which follow in the train of such selfishness, such as the competitive attitude which later grows into the combative one, and the acquisitiveness which grows into aggressiveness, cannot be escaped. Yet carried too far, such attitudes defeat the very object of all this evolution. Real evil appears only in the human kingdom, where the union of human intellect and animal desire produces creatures capable of wickedness such as no animal is capable of. A stage has now been reached when it must be halted and when the ultimate goal must be recalled to view are the goal of elevating the ego's consciousness to the over-selves. This need not be done in all its fullness, only the simplest, most elementary recall, such as popular religion suggests, is enough. Man has now fully appeared on nature's scene and the necessary mental instruments for effecting his spiritualization have already been developed but they are being misused for what are often anti-spiritual purposes. The higher opportunities provided by physical birth are either frittered away in vanities or abused in sins or neglected in other preoccupations. The ego is like a child that wants to remain in the stage of childhood forever. But life will not permit it to do so. The time for its crossing over the threshold of adult spiritual responsibility has come. It must face the serious issues of existence, the why and whither of its presence on earth. When we speak here of the human ego, it should be obvious that the reference is to its evolutionary stage as found in the largest number of human beings upon this planet. That is, the reference is not to the small minority now in incarnation who have passed beyond this stage. It is this majority which stands mostly at the midpoint of evolution. It can go farther along the present road only to self-destruction. Its progression on this planet has reached its final climax of individualization. If it is to evolve, it must be henceforth by adding the controls, checks and compensatory balances of another goal. It must dispense with the excessive personal selfishness and intellectual materiality which lifted it to its present capacity, but which when unbalanced blinded it also to its best interests and truest knowledge. Their growth was only a particular phase essential only for a particular period. That period is now drawing to an abrupt close. Today the individual entity's needs are inevitably different. In order to become man it had to develop egotism. In order to surpass man, it will have to submerge egotism. Then only can the ruthless struggle and cruel history of human relations surely be ameliorated. in the balanced practice of self-help and accommodation to others, in the cultivation of spiritual faith and intuition, the next phase of its progress lies. It has moved far from the protozoa and has now reached a point in the evolutionary scale where a considerable change over to another direction has become imperative. It must take the great step forward to a higher understanding of its own existence. Every day that it delays doing so, invites further suffering. The evil misdirection of its own physical and intellectual forces has come too dangerously near to being a total one. The species man approaches the most critical hairpin bend in inward and outward life. With the 20th century at its meridian, this self-worship, this materialistic intellectuality and this excessive outward turning begin to lose their evolutionary value. The aggressive animal forces in the ego are especially making a desperate stand to keep their ancient rule. What we see all around us is partly a visible manifestation of the invisible convulsions through which it is passing. Its own fierce resistance is reflected in the international situation. If both leaders and led persist in ignoring the new orientation, their convulsions might well become dying ones and the civilizations they have built up may disintegrate with them. In this state of extreme extroversion and aggressive egoism, millions of people have become quite blind to the higher purpose of human life. They consider man merely a thinking animal. The moral struggle between right and wrong merely a matter of expediency and convenience, the aspiration for goodness merely a morbid pathological condition. Too many other human beings have fallen even farther than this. They have said, "Evil be thou my good." Because humanity in the past has been living in a vicious circle of ego domination and consequent suffering, this circle must now be broken. The unfoldment of selfhood through a series of lives on this earth has reached its culmination. It has led inevitably to a situation where the strength and violence of the I must be checked if it is not constantly to injure itself and others by excessive blindness, grasping and possessiveness. Although every living creature possesses egoism in the form of self-preservation, only man has brought it to such socially dangerous extremes because he alone has brought intellectual cunning to its service. It has reached a point where it must either submit itself henceforth to the checks and controls of the higher self, or it will provoke the gravest danger of destruction for humanity. The human entity's inordinate clinging to its combative animality and selfish personality is being challenged and attacked by world forces and turned into a cause of its own psychic suffering. The tremendous tension which has risen in its consciousness because of its inner resistance to this evolutionary pressure working both from within by spiritual influences and from without by historical events, has been too much for many people. It has unbalanced their psyches and caused much semi-insanity. The critical point has been reached, the farthest point of their straying. Beyond this, they will be in danger of losing whatever spiritual qualities still remain. In developing and inflating this egotism, they have gone farther and farther away from the divine source of their being. It is now being carried to the extreme, resulting in such widespread atheism, aggressive selfishness and open immorality, that the danger of utter self-destruction has arisen. The aggression of the animal ego and the perfection of the lower intellect have gone as far as they should for the present cycle. Their attenuation must begin. If too few individuals and no nations are voluntarily willing to start the process, the forces of destiny will cooperate with the other factors to arrest the present trend still more drastically. The shock of such events to the nervous system would then induce different moods and even different views of life from those previously prevailing. Thus, the evolutionary compulsion is being laid upon the extroverted and inflated personal ego to abandon its present position and take the path of return. We know that this is physically the most exciting time in history. Do we know that it is also spiritually the most critical time? Humanity has been led to the crossroads of its incarnated life. It needs to pause and reflect. The hour has struck in the ego's cosmic journey when it must choose whether or not it will turn round to face and then begin to obey its own divine soul. It has come to the end of its severest evolutionary cycle. Deeper into darkness it will not be allowed to go. Higher into light it does not want to go. Forces both inside and outside itself wage a titanic war for its right and wrong guidance. It has arrived at the climacteric period of its long history. Its approach to this evolutionary crossroads is indeed one of the most powerful influences contributing to the present world crisis. Events so constantly shape themselves that the situation must be faced. Momentous decisions are so constantly required that they cannot be put off nor their demands ignored.